Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. Kat Johnson kicked the season off with an episode about food and football, so now we're turning to one of my favorite sports, talking about cookbooks. We'll take a sneak peek at a few recipe breakthroughs that Rose Levy Barenbaum discovered while working on her 12th cookbook.
You know, so this was such a eureka thing. People ask me if I still keep learning. And yeah, just thinking about it and trying to find a better way. It happens.
And hear about the challenges of writing a book about alcohol from HRN host Souther Teague.
The history of drinking is very blurry. Because people were drinking and no one was writing, taking notes.
Plus, we'll get all the expert dish about the most exciting cookbook titles heading to bookstores this fall.
Like jazz music, it's been a part of American cuisine for centuries.
Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts and be the first to know when the next episode drops.
Holy cow, I'm 150 episodes old. Coming up on this episode of Tech Bites. Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 165 countries around the world. Today, Thursday, September 13th, they are tuning in to Tech Bites, the weekly show where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. And today is the best show ever, and also one of the worst shows ever. Let me explain. This is the 150th episode of Tech Bites, which is amazing. I never, ever, ever thought we'd get to 150 when I started the show back in January of 2015. So that's pretty exciting. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened in the last 150 and take a look forward to what's coming up on the next 150. And that's the super fantastic part. The kind of sad, bum me out, you know, sad face emoji part is today also marks the last day of Dave Tatasciore, Heritage Radio Network studio manager, one of the engineers of this show, and kind of, you know, the Ed McMahon on the couch. So we have him actually in the studio, in the seat, with the headphones, on the mic.
So this is what it looks like in here. Wow.
Oh, you've been in here before.
That's true, yeah.
So we're going to take a look back with Dave Tatt. Ugh, you're leaving us.
I know, I'm sorry. And I can't even play a sound effect from where I sit right now.
I know. Well, you could make them with your noise. You could human beatbox. So, Dave, you started about a year after I did in February 2016.
Yeah, I started the day after Valentine's Day of that year.
Why do you remember that so precisely?
Not because of any particular attachment to the holiday, I'm making air quotes, holiday of Valentine's Day. I don't know. I guess that is like a, you know, a recognizable calendar
Hallmark holiday
date. So yeah, that's stuck in my mind. It was Monday, February 16th.
So,
or 15th rather.
Can you travel in the Wayback Time Machine and think about what your preconceived notions and expectations were when you started on February 15th? Do you remember what you thought it was going to be like?
I'm not sure. I mean, I kind of accidentally got this job. I was in grad school finishing up. I was supposed to be working on my thesis, and I saw
that... Wasn't working on your thesis?
What's that?
You weren't working on your thesis?
I was.
Okay.
I was supposed to be working on my thesis. And yeah, so I saw the job posting and kind of thought, okay, I need to just sort of practice applying for jobs again, like now coming out of school and like having this whole new skill set and you know, approach to it, like my resume and my cover letter, all that stuff really was in need of updating. And so, okay, like, yeah, let me try this and see what happens. And then Came in for an interview, and before I knew it, I was going to be starting work here. And I don't know. I guess I didn't really know what to think because it is such a unique space. Like my interview was over in the Heritage Foods warehouse because we used to have our office over there. And I remember walking in and like sitting down to wait for my interview to begin and just like kind of taking it all in. Like, what is this? I'm in a meat warehouse. Like, is there a studio? I had never been to Roberto's before that time.
For people who don't follow along regularly at home, Heritage Radio Network was started by Patrick Martins, who owns a company called Heritage Foods USA. And that company is located around the corner, and it is a company that's focused on selling heritage breed pork and
pigs
other
and turkeys,
pigs
mainly,
and turkeys
I believe.
Primarily, and then lots of other delicious organic farm-raised heritage meat products. But it's actually a functioning warehouse with, boxes being packed of meat and big walk-in refrigerators and freezers and hunks of meat and trucks and all that kind of stuff. So I too had a similar kind of, oh, this is interesting moment when I walked into the Heritage Radio offices located in the Heritage Foods warehouse.
Right.
So this is basically a 3-year exercise in how to get a job?
Yeah, basically.
And it resulted in you getting a job?
It did, yeah.
So you didn't know what to expect. What did you what were you thinking when you were sitting over there in the warehouse? Did you listen to any of the episodes before you went to your interview?
I'm sure I did. Hopefully I did. I can't remember specifically, but I really did not know what to expect. Like I'd read the job description and like researched the station a little bit, but then coming and seeing it in person, I was just like trying to figure out sort of organizationally how this all worked. And
first impressions, do you remember?
I guess it was probably like, wow, they really are a bit of a pirate radio station out here. I mean, just we're 2 shipping containers in the back of Roberta's, and like the neighborhood was, you know, I mean, it wasn't like totally wild 2.5 years ago. I think it had already been like fairly gentrified, but still.
There were already the Chanel quote graffiti ads painted on walls.
And graffiti tours throughout the neighborhood, which are always still disturbing to me. It seemed like, okay, they've really got this sort of stitched together. And I don't mean that as a criticism, but yeah, just it was impressive. Like, okay, all this stuff somehow works together. Like all these
and somehow there's 35
elements.
Live shows a week all happening here.
Somehow
with these 4 cables and 6 pairs of headphones and 4 mics,
2.5 engineers.
There we go. So looking back, so almost 3 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the thing that surprised you the most
about
being
the
here?
Job?
About the job, the shows. Personalities. What was the biggest surprise?
I guess for me, just like this whole world of food that was opened up to me. I always, enjoyed restaurants and I consider myself to be a fairly adventurous eater, but I didn't really know much about this world. And the one thing about having so many shows is that you see such a broad range of perspectives in the world of food. I mean, you're obviously coming at it from a particular angle, from, food tech, and just every host, every show has its own unique angle on the world of food. And so it really was, I mean, I know Jack always said this, it was like a master's degree in food education just working here. And I think that's really true. You know, I've learned a lot of stuff that as a more casual eater, or I don't know,
eater,
somebody
goer,
like
diner,
yeah, as just like a casual participant in the food world, I it would have taken a lot longer or a lot more effort, I guess. To
it wouldn't just be happening here, just, through osmosis.
Yeah,
while
it just
you were
sort of came
work.
To me here. So I'm really fortunate in that way. I've gotten this education.
So Jack Insley is the original station studio manager who is now in D.C. running a radio station called Full Service Radio out of the Line Hotel,
That's right, I believe.
If you're down there, I believe the studio's in the lobby. It looks pretty sweet.
Yeah.
At some point, I hope to make it down there and maybe be a guest on one of the shows.
Same.
So have you I'm assuming that Jack listens faithfully to every single episode of Tech Bytes.
I just was chatting with Jack yesterday. He didn't realize I was leaving.
Well, there's a lot going on, especially when you're down in D.C.
Yeah, it's true.
So is there anything that you can point to significantly that you have changed in your food life since your time working here? I know as an example, when we did the show on, and this was before your time, but the show on Are Delivery Services Bad for Restaurants? And we had a couple independent restaurant owners talk about Seamless and some other things. And for a particular kind of restaurant, a single independent operator, something like Seamless is really taking a significant portion of their profit out of their pocket because they charge upwards of 15, 20% per order, which is basically the money that they make. And so it was really, it's a very powerful episode, and they basically talk about feeling obligated to be on the platforms or else they would lose business, even though they're only making 80% of the money that they could make.
Right, right.
And after that, when I was walking out of the studio, Jack said, wow, you know, that he had never thought about that, and he was going to stop using Seamless immediately.
Wow.
And, you know, that was just a, I mean, that was a direct correlation, but is there anything generally that you can think about that you used to do 2-3 years ago with your food that you don't do now, or some new thing that you discovered that you can't live without?
Well, I definitely cook now.
Really?
That's, so that's a thing. But also, yeah, I think just being made aware of these issues in the world of food that are very topical, like the Seamless thing, for example. Another thing... the sort of rise in no tipping policies. I guess Marlow and Sons, Andrew Tarlow was, or I guess more was Danny Meyer that really started
Danny Meyer.
And sort of he
hospitality included.
Right, right. So yeah, just like all the issues surrounding that movement. Obviously, we're in the back of Roberta's, and so we get this unique look into the world of hospitality. And I feel like in a way, you know, these are also my coworkers, the staff here at Roberta's, because I'm here with them every single day, and I've, you know, become friends with them and see the day-to-day struggles and challenges that they face.
Are you a better restaurant consumer now?
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
Do you tip better?
No, yeah, I mean, I always, I grew up, you know, in bars, kind of like my dad was a bachelor.
Were you
when
a baby in a bar?
Yeah, no, I don't think I was a baby in a bar, but I was a like a preteen in a bar. And yeah, no, so I always grew up, and then you know, I have family and friends who have always been in the hospitality industry. So you know, I was surrounded by it at all times, and it was always close to my heart. So yeah, no, I learned from an early age you have to take care of the people who take care of you.
Wow, that's always good. And regardless of what happens with the tipping situation, you should always be nice to the wait staff and your servers and the bussers and the bartenders and everybody
and
who works in your
restaurant. And you're not as
funny
as you think you are.
Absolutely
when you're
not.
Talking
and
to
you
a
know
server.
What? Nobody wants to date you either. For real.
Right.
Favorite meetings, favorite guests, celebrity sightings, people
oh
you
God.
Were really happy to meet. I know that, you know, I have sort of a running list of people that I would love to have on the show, and some of them...
Michelle Obama,
her husband, that guy, Barry, Michelle's husband, Barry. Yeah. I would love to have Mark Maron, podcaster who interviewed Barack Obama on his podcast, WTF, which is an amazing two-part episode. I would love to have Michael Barbaro, who hosts the New York Times podcast, The Daily. It's not really food tech, but he's a podcaster. He has a great interview voice. Mm. I really love that podcast. I did get to have Nathan Myhrvold on my show, and he was one of the top sort of food tech guys that I was interested in having because
that was a
he's so interesting. And, you know, I'm usually pretty at ease interviewing people and talking. I was really wanting to be smart when I talked to him.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that.
Because he, has double master's degrees by the time he was like
PhDs.
15
yeah,
or something
in,
like that.
Like
and he worked with Stephen Hawking. And I mean, he's just incredibly smart, but very passionate.
Yeah.
Very passionate. That's one of my favorite episodes, I think, looking back, is the Nathan Mirfold episode.
He loves bread.
Absolutely. And pizza.
And pizza.
So, favorite meetings?
I think, I'm trying to remember, like, who's the most famous? I think the most famous person that I had the opportunity to meet was Kyle MacLachlan
of Woo!
Twin Peaks fame.
Was he here, Hawk and Wine?
He was not here. We went to him.
Even better.
At St. John's Bread and Life. And he, yeah, he owns a winery in Walla Walla, Washington, I believe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Very nice guy. Wouldn't give me any spoilers about the new season of Twin Peaks. Yeah, so that was cool. We had Tom Colicchio in here once, actually. That was kind of a trip. I mean, so I've always said, like, I'm the perfect person for this job because not coming from the world of food.
You're very blasé about it.
Yeah, I don't get really starstruck by people.
And you don't know who most of them are?
That's part of it, for sure. But also, I mean, even him, I was like, yeah, I've seen him on Top Chef. Top Chef, right? Is that right?
Correct.
Ding, ding, ding. But yeah, I don't know. I just, it makes it easier.
He's also a chef who owns some restaurants.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that.
He's got that place called Kraft.
He's doing all right, I think.
He started off at Gramercy Tavern. Well, he didn't start off at Gramercy Tavern, but really won many accolades and awards when he and Danny opened Gramercy Tavern as sort of the first American restaurant with French style and caliber of service was the impetus.
Okay.
And one of the sort of backstories to that place opening.
Yeah, just so...
Kraftwitch, that's also...
I mean, yeah, like, I respect these people for sure, but it's made it a lot easier to do my job because I can, like, say, hey, yeah, that's fine. Like, just
talking
to the microphone, please. Like, do what you got to do. And yeah, I think that's been an asset for me. But but it's been cool meeting people like that. Jim Leahy is always a trip whenever he's here. Yeah, I don't know. There's just too many. There's too many to list, and I can't even think of them off the top of my. I should have written this down, probably. But
that's okay. Yeah. When we were messaging about doing the show,
You know, it's been a busy week, as you can probably imagine.
I guess so.
Tying up loose ends.
Busy week, and I'm going to do a long lead into the commercial break, so you can take the short
walk into the control booth.
We are going to take a quick break, like we always do, to find out who is the underwriter of this episode. Did you know that Heritage Food Radio is a 501c3 nonprofit? That we subsist entirely on underwriters, grants, and our members? Well, if you didn't know, give a listen to this amazing company that's helping us keep the mics hot and the lights on. Stay with us.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Sirchois was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Well, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. And today, we are talking about the 150th episode of this show. Amazing. Who'd have thunk that when we started back in January of 2015, we'd make it to 150? And who'd have thought that our studio manager and show engineer Dave Tatasciore would be leaving us, which he is today.
They grow up so fast.
Oh my gosh. Well, that 3-year experiment of how to get a job finally paid off and you got a new job.
That's true.
Yep. All right. So you have been a participant on this show beyond just sort of running the control panel and the dials and packaging it and pushing it out on Simplecast into the podcasting world. How do you feel about having been a participant in the show? The daily apps, what do you like? Commentary, what do you think?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I mean, every show...
I don't think that was in the job description.
No, it definitely was not. I didn't have any expectation that I would be a... Jesus Christ. I can't keep these headphones on my head. I'm not used to being out here. I didn't really expect to be a participant in any of the shows. Engineering is usually a hands-off kind of thing, especially coming from like the music world where I came from. The engineer is just performing mostly a technical function, and then also, you know, at the discretion of the producer, will be asked to contribute creatively as well. And so I guess that is sort of a similar relationship. Like, you are the producer of the show, and so you have invited me to collaborate in a creative way, not just a purely technical way. I do enjoy it. Like, I am comfortable sitting in front of a microphone. It doesn't freak me out or anything. And depending on the show, like, obviously, you know, there's different levels of involvement, but that's what keeps my days interesting, you know.
Do you think you'd like to have your own show?
I don't think so, no.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't really know. If I had something really compelling to say, sure, but I feel like that's sort of the issue, I think, with podcasting in general right now. It's just like there's so many voices and not...
Go ahead, Dave. I'm going to give you a minute. You can do your podcast rant.
Not every... You know, I just
Go
think...
Ahead.
The industry is so saturated with content.
Don't beat around the bush. Just use all your words.
Yeah, the industry is very saturated with content. There's this prioritization of quantity over quality in a lot of cases, I think. That's not to say there aren't great podcasts out there. But yeah, I don't really feel the need to contribute to that din of voices unless I have something really compelling to say. I mean, I guess a lot of people think that they do have something compelling to say, but I don't think that's necessarily true.
Well, it's an interesting phenomenon. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm not just a...
Well, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
True, true, true. It's an interesting side effect of technology, I think, and how technology has created a different public behavior. Technology makes podcasting possible and available to just about anybody who has a smartphone or a computer and an internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to everyone has a camera on their phone, you know, and with the advent of things like Instagram and photo sharing and all the photo editors, is everyone a photographer because they can take pictures?
Right. It's the democratization phenomenon.
And in some instances, you know, there's a broad spectrum. In some instances, you would say, absolutely, there are cases where, you know, the technology being so widely available gives rise to voices that would not have otherwise been heard,
sure,
that become impactful. But then there's also just a lot of crap. I mean, let's be clear. Nobody needs to see, like, your to-do list and pictures of your cat all the time.
Right. I don't even have an Instagram anymore.
Really?
Yeah, get rid of that.
Do you wish that there was an audio social media platform? Everything is either visual or words. There's nothing really audio. You do have SoundCloud.
What would that look like? Yeah, I guess SoundCloud would be that.
Well,
right?
What would it look like?
No, actually, I think that's a good point. SoundCloud, really, and especially with a lot of young music producers who have been empowered by this democratization of technology, SoundCloud now is it's the arena for them. You know, like, major labels are this antiquated concept. People don't care about putting out
albums. Not everybody
cares about putting out records in the same way, but it seems like for a lot of young people making music, the currency that they trade in is like likes on SoundCloud,
well,
comments.
That's all the currency.
Yeah.
Download subscriptions.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing. I wonder what the next generation of all this will be.
Hard to say.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite highlights of Tech Bytes?
Oh boy. Well, you know, there was this one really great episode where you had these two up and coming podcast producers on to talk about their satirical fiction storytelling podcast.
So you actually do want to have a podcast, though. Well, and you did one.
Okay, yeah, let me clarify. I don't think I would want to do something in this format.
Personal opinion?
Yeah, I think like this format works for certain people. I don't think it would work for me as a host.
So you did come on the show to talk about What's the Story. It was show number 88.
WTSpodcast.com.
It's very interesting. It's a satirical podcast about a fact checker at a magazine who becomes disillusioned by facts making the stories and wants to make stories without facts.
Correct. And we did this before the
45
current. Yeah. Before 45, pre 45.
Yeah. Everybody knows what that means. It's okay. That's
so
enough. That's enough.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't
post Obama.
Yeah, right.
Pre 45.
It's a post Obama world. And I'm not trying to say that we are some great prognosticators or you know, that we were on the bleeding edge of things, but we do find it very, I don't know, interesting how that all worked out. Like, we had
no idea
that it would be so relevant.
It's a fun series, and I really liked some of the over exaggerated stereotypes that you did.
Yeah.
As the characters.
Well, yeah, certainly we all play exaggerated versions of ourselves. And then
that was exaggerated, the cranky guy in the booth?
Well, slightly, you know.
I guess typically when you're cranky in the booth, the mic's not on.
Yeah, I don't share it. I don't air it out on the air.
So that was a great episode. Any other episodes that you remember, rememberable, something interesting, apps?
I was
and they don't have to be a famous guest or
like
that.
I'm kind of hewing close to stuff like this, I guess, sort of the more outlier type episodes. Like when I was helping you put together the no-show show. Well, actually,
right.
First of all, let me say the no-show show I think is a brilliant idea because it's very meta. It's very utilitarian because, you know, you need it for a very specific reason. Like when
a
guest doesn't show up.
The no-show show about the show. It was one of those instances where the guest didn't show up, and it's stressful. It's really stressful to be booking guests for a live radio show. And it's also part of why I have the engineer talking with me, because, you know, I was just initially very afraid of being alone on the air. And of course, you're petrified that the guest isn't going to show up. And it happens sometimes. I mean, accidents happen, people oversleep, people, you know, can't make it, there's snowstorms, all that kind of stuff. So we were sitting here and there was a guest who didn't show up, and I didn't have an episode that was recorded standing by ready to go. So we were talking about it and thinking about it and decided that we would do a no-show show about the show, and we would record it, and then we would keep it for the day that the guest was a no-show. And we actually ran it in July. It's episode 144. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And that's actually on my list of things I have to do today, because we made a second no-show show.
Yes.
So before I leave today, I need to make sure that that is
canned and ready to
go. Squared away, yeah.
Yeah, the no-show show number two is great. It's about no-shows in restaurants. Yeah, restaurants and live
radio. I've never done
that. No-showed?
Yeah, never no-showed. Although I guess I don't often go to places that require a reservation, so...
Yeah, well, people cherry pick or forget or, you know, although with the advent of apps, it makes it easier. So the no-show show, you like that one?
Yeah, I love that. But I was going to say, when I was helping you edit that together, I had to go back to a previous show where you interviewed Jack Inslee and DJ Uptown Nico. So that was cool to hear.
That was the DJ Takeover show.
Yeah. To hear the men behind the curtain. Obviously, I identify with that, so.
That was a great episode, and the two of them together do a live set at the in the middle of the show that's about 20, 25 minutes, which is really good. I actually listen to that sometimes when I'm on my commute. I think it's important to get to know the people who make the show, not just me, but all of the participants, because you do have input. I mean, technically, you're the engineer. But we talk about, what do you think about this idea for a show? How was that?
Yeah.
What do you think about this ending or opening or cold drop, or what should we do? Sometimes, you know, being the host and producer is tough, because you need, you know, a second person sometimes to
bounce ideas off of and get a read on. You know, sometimes you think it's great, but maybe it's not. Or maybe you didn't think it was particularly interesting, but it was a revelation to somebody else. So it's really helpful. And I think, you know, you participate in the show, you should, you know, people should know you a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And also, like, I think that's a part of the growth of the technology, is that these roles are, there's a lot more overlap. Like, the engineer and producer roles are able to overlap a lot more. Whereas, I don't know, like, to use the music industry example again, like, in the early days of, I mean, if you think of, like, the classic, like, golden age of, like, you have, like, the A&R person, the producer, the engineer, these were all, like, very clearly defined roles, and they, you know, worked together, but they were very, the division of labor was much more strict, and now that's, those lines are totally blurred.
Yeah, it's all kind of melding together,
yeah.
Multitasking, multifaceted. So we did 150 on the shows. I mean, it's totally possible that I'll do 150 more. I mean, that'd be another almost 3 years. So that would put me into 2021?
Yeah. Yeah, by my calendar. Yeah.
Woo!
So, Jen, let me turn the mic on you for a second. Where do you see yourself in 3 years? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? In my job interview at the new place, I did that. I turned, like, when they asked me.
Oh, did they? Is that part of why?
I was like, this is pretty slick, I thought. I was like, yeah, you know, everybody, it's like a cliche to get that question in job interview. They didn't ask me this, but I was like, yeah, that's like a well-known job interview cliche. Like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I always found that really difficult to answer as, like, a person, but... For you guys running a business, obviously you have to have some sort of
5-year business
long-term plan. So yeah, where do you see the company in 5 years? And they were like, oh, wow, that's a really good question.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. Thank you.
He's a smart one.
Anyway,
has,
sorry.
He has a cognitive thought process.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, you know, I was walking through Union Square Park in Manhattan not too long ago. And I was walking from Soho to Chelsea, where I live. And it was right around the time of graduation. So I guess it was May, graduation for New York University, NYU, because it's all around Washington Square Park and in the Village. There are a lot of college kids in their purple graduation robes taking pictures with family members. Yeah. And it was really lovely. And I was thinking that, wow, I really haven't gone that far. I haven't really gotten that far in life. I went to NYU. I was one of those kids in the purple robe at one point taking pictures, although not with my phone. And I'm, you know, years later walking through the park. I live not too far from where I went to college. I moved away to Paris for a few years and then came back. But I mean, where am I going to be in 5 years? I'm probably going to be in New York City, downtown. I'll probably still be in Chelsea.
Yeah.
I have a rent-stabilized apartment. Ooh. I'll probably be there forever. You know, and when you live in New York and you have the opportunity of all the things that that life brings you, the people and things like that, I'll probably be a very similar version, you know, of the person that I am right now. I'll be a New Yorker. I'll be downtown. I will be working in some sort of writing, arts, media field. I will probably continue to be Sporty Spice, you know, always like training down at Fight Club and all of that. Maybe I will become a trainer or a coach.
Yeah.
That might be an add-on. I'll probably, hopefully, am planning on, you know, still being married to that French guy.
Oh, yeah. Oui.
So probably, you know, eating, traveling, cooking.
Cool. So that nothing, stuff. Nothing really...
Yeah.
No real like upheaval or anything like that in your foreseeable future.
I don't envision that.
Yeah.
My life's pretty stable. Will I still be doing a podcast? Will I still be doing this show? Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I would not have thought necessarily. I, you know, when I started the show, when I too sat in that Heritage Foods warehouse for my first meeting with the leadership of the network at the time, it was Aaron Fairbanks, who was the executive director. I don't think I was thinking about show 150.
Yeah. Yeah, how can you? I mean, like I said, I really had no idea what to expect. I was just kind of going with the flow. And yeah, here we are.
So we're not going to have the benefit of your ear and your advice and your take on things after today. Although I fully anticipate that you will subscribe to Tech Bytes on your favorite podcasting platform, whether that be iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or any podcasting platform powered by Simplecast. I expect that you will subscribe, listen regularly, and leave a great, great five-star review.
Five-star.
But what kind of shows do you think would be great to see in the future? Is there anything you think we haven't covered, should cover? Do you like more of the roundtables? Do you like the idea of the software platform pitching to a potential restaurant customer?
You mean with Tech Bytes specifically?
Yeah, Tech Bytes specifically. Like, what do I care about the other shows?
Well, in terms of topics, I don't really know. I mean, that's not really my...
No, but you live in the world and you're interested in food.
Right.
And you have technology. So are there, for example, we're going to do a show on blockchain in about 2 weeks.
Oh, that's interesting because I know very little about it.
Blockchain's very interesting. It's mystical. It's tied to that wacky Bitcoin currency, and it is being touted as a huge potential problem solver for a lot of the significant food issues in the world today, namely food waste, food quality, transparency, all of that kind of stuff. And most people don't know what the hell it is, let alone how it applies to food. So we're going to do a kind of blockchain 101 show. So that's something I've been wanting to do for a while. It has taken me a long time to find a person who could speak to blockchain initially and then speak to blockchain in the food industry.
Right.
So we have someone from IBM coming.
Oh, cool.
I'm excited, from their food group.
Is it Watson?
Watson's not a person.
Not yet.
Not a someone. Watson's a something.
Not yet.
We had Watson on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that wasn't to deflect the question with the topics, but I mean, like, I was going to go a different direction and say, in terms of the format, again, the interview format, like, it works well. You do a great job of it. I think.
Thank you.
I think also the future.
I do a lot of research.
I know. But I think the future includes more production value, like more highly produced content in the shows. And I would like to see that. I mean, I think when people listen to a podcast, there's that expectation now. You listen to your Marc Maron's or whatever, and then that's just like, you know, that's going to be an interview format, a pretty straightforward thing. But also, like, you know, if you listen to stuff on...
Well, The Daily, they have... It's a produced show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The Daily is a great example.
Interviews, they have music, they use audio clips.
Yeah. And we have, we have Meat and Three, but that's a little different. Like, that's, well, first of all, not a daily show. And it's not really a breaking news show either. I think it would be really interesting. I mean, if we had the...
Bandwidth.
The bandwidth to do that, that would be really interesting. Because there are a lot of, very timely breaking news topics in the world of food that we should be covering. But, I just think, like, putting more time into the production of a show, and maybe moving away from the live radio thing a little bit, but that's a whole other.
That's a Pandora's box.
Yeah. But
more produced pieces, something you and I discussed, which we will not get to do because you're leaving before you had the opportunity to sit down with me and go through really doing an excellent job in capturing interviews out in the world and starting to interview people at events and in different places
Totally.
And bringing those back and then incorporating them into the show is something that I'd like to do going forward. What about guests? What about topics? Anything you're curious about?
In the world of food tech?
Yeah.
Well, the blockchain
thing. Now that you mention it, blockchain.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of stuff that you haven't covered.
Well, other things I'd like to cover. I would like to do a show with kids.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of food tech kids are using, what kind of apps they are using on their phone. Are they using the cooking platforms? Are they into the cooking services? I don't really know many people who have kids. It's been, that's been a show I've been wanting to do since the beginning. And My greatest barrier is finding kids to put in the studio and put on air. But I would be interested in, you know, little kids in grammar school, middle school. We have the Saxelby Radio Scholars, who are high school kids at the Food and Finance High School, who have been on the show, and they're fantastic, and they offer a really great perspective on things. But I'd love to do something with kids because they are our future.
Yeah, and also maybe it's like cliche, but they have grown up in
the digital world.
Such a digital world, and it's so much more, like, you know, we understand technology to an extent, sort obviously, but they are growing up, their brains are forming with such a greater integration of technology than we ever did. I mean, we were sort of more fully formed when we started to learn these things, and for them it's just an everyday part of life, and that to me is really interesting, because I mean, literally, they have different brains than us because of this.
In so many ways, and potentially actually even different brains in an actual physical sense, physiological sense,
totally,
because of the different cognitive skills and things like that. So kids, blockchain, I want to do some more shows on the tech gripes front, more roundtables about problems people are having with technology or voids that need to be filled by technology, you know,
POS systems that are actually intuitive.
And, I know, you know, because we have
struggle with that here at Roberta's.
Food and restaurant focus, you know, maybe people from that neighborhood. I'm also wanting to do a show where people get really excited and maybe have an argument.
Yeah, you've never really had an argument.
No,
blow
I don't have
up
really
on this
any
boi-
I don't really have any boisterous shows. Yeah. Sometimes I wish I could have a boisterous show.
Well, yeah, you should try for that.
Yeah, we also haven't done a Fighting Foodies B-side show in a while. I think we're due. We haven't done one yet this year.
What would that entail?
Getting some Fighting Foodies on. Have you listened to any of the B-side shows?
I guess not.
So the B-side, there are two episodes, Fighting Foodies. The first one is people who are in the food industry who fight. And the second one was about the...
Wait, you mean who fight like you?
Like
train
Muay Thai.
And,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was about the first fight, which is the weight cut. So it was food and fighting. Mm. Anybody who does a combat sport, they have to fight at a certain weight because the belief is that body weight is really important to how strong you are. And
right.
So the only way to make it a fair fight is to make everybody be at the same weight.
Right. Do you believe that?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Okay.
I do. It's true. Definitely.
Just curious because it's so, it seems so crazy that you have to... get to weight.
We'll do a little experiment. We'll find somebody else after the show, and we'll all go outside, and I'll push you, and then the other person will push you, and then you'll see what the difference in weight makes.
Right, but does body weight... There's not like a one-to-one ratio there between body weight and physical strength.
No, but somebody bigger is going to be stronger.
Okay.
So if I weigh 100 pounds and my... competitor weighs 150 pounds, they're going to be much stronger than I am.
Yeah, okay.
Just generally. So it's you won't have equal strength, but you have equal opportunity to be of equal strength.
Gotcha.
But it's really the only sport where you have to hit weight officially, legally. Mm-hmm. It's in the contracts, how much you're supposed to weigh for the fight. Imagine, you know, if Michael Phelps had to weigh a specific weight and get on the scale before he jumped into the pool. I mean, athletes are always concerned about what they eat and what they weigh for their performance. But, you know, Simone Biles doesn't have to get on a scale before she gets on the balance beam.
Right.
And if people did, it would maybe be different. So it's a really interesting correlation. So we did a show on food and the weight cut and had a woman who's a competitor in jiu-jitsu, who's also a professional chef and a professional fighter. We do one of those a year maybe, so I feel like we're up for another one of those. I also feel like we're up for another disconnect from your tech, which we've done about once a year.
That's something I'm slowly doing across the board. Like I said, I don't have Instagram anymore. I rarely use social media. I guess just social media specifically. I'm still pretty dependent upon tech in other ways.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple of those episodes.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to those with some good suggestions on how to, there's a show on just how to start to minimize your tech use throughout the day. And then there's one.
Don't take your phone to bed with you.
Yes. And then there's one about doing a 24-hour food tech people fast, which is pretty interesting. and something I've been wanting to try, and maybe I will. That is all the time that we have today.
No.
Episode 150 and Dave Tatasciore's last day.
It's weird. It hasn't really hit me yet.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just going to walk back in here Monday.
You're going to show up tomorrow?
No, tomorrow I'll be out of town.
Dave, any last closing words, things you'll remember forever, things you really want to forget? What was the biggest surprise? What was the biggest surprise? What do you think will be one of the memories that you take with you? Like, and it could really just be something that totally caught you off guard or that you did not expect.
That's such a tough question. I don't know. I guess just generally this feeling of being a part of this, being an integral part of this whole thing, and really feeling that love from you hosts. I mean, everybody's been really great and supportive, and like, I'm absolutely certain I'm going to stay in touch with everybody. Like, I'm still going to be
famous last words,
New York. No, of course. I mean, like, people say that, but really, I mean, like, this has been a home to me for almost 3 years. I don't know. I'm bad at goodbyes.
Do you
final words are so hard to devise.
Do you feel like your cool factor is going to decrease the moment you walk out the door?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm going to be going to work in Midtown. That's not very cool.
Yeah, in slacks.
Yeah, slacks.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll
just
wave at you.
Stiff.
We'll wave at you as you go by. Well, today is the last day that Tech Bytes is engineered by David Tatasciore. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, your host and producer. Our theme song is Nomad a CPU Track by DJ Uptown Nico. We broadcast live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time from the Heritage Radio Network studio inside Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Tech Bytes is powered by Simplecast and is available on your favorite podcasting platform, including iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Come back and see us next Thursday. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and this is Tech Bytes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.